Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm okay. We've had beautiful weather this week. I'm in a good mood. I'm pumped to talk with you today.
Oh, pumped.
I'm pumped.
Who's that guy that used to say, I'm going to pump you up?
Oh, I remember that. Oh, who was that? That was a big deal, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, before the time of memes, that would have been like...
That would have been the bomb meme.
That would have been like the greatest meme ever. Oh, well. Anyway, so this week has been an interesting one. Let's start on a positive note. I, the athlete, of course, would like to start with the Olympics.
Okay.
So as we already discussed last week, Gabby and Simone led the U.S. American team to a gold and all around. But unfortunately, the way they've been treated online has been different. And you, I would like to call out.
Ooh, call me out.
Mm-hmm. Said last week, you don't think there's really been a big difference between the way Gabby Douglas has been treated and Simone Biles. Well, everyone sided with me and wrote about it this week. Even The Guardian wrote an article, which was titled, The Hounding of Gabby Douglas, an Unworthy End for a Great American Champion. And I think it has to be said that she's responded to all of the backlash that she's received online and said that she was heartbroken and really couldn't understand why people were treating her the way that they are. And I still can't understand it either. But nonetheless, it doesn't take away their historical importance. Gabby Douglas, Simone Biles, and Simone Manuel. Simone Manuel went on to win more medals after we recorded the last podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I read somewhere else that there's a record 50 out gay, lesbian, and bisexual athletes competing in the Rio Olympics. That's pretty spectacular. Downside, for whatever reason, people are horrible people. Or maybe I should start with the upside. So the upside is there's a transgender athlete competing in the Olympics. The first out transgender athlete competing in the Olympics, Chris Mosier, mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. is starring in a Nike commercial. That's pretty dope. So if you haven't watched that, you should.
Mm-hmm.
And I preface with that because of an article that we posted this week. You might recall the hashtag hands off caster. No, no. Okay. Well, the South African athlete, Caster Semenya, who runs the 800 meter distance, has been hounded for years about if she's really a woman, if she's allowed to compete with women. It's really unbelievable what she's done. She's undergone gender testing after winning gold at the 2009 World Championships in Berlin. She was cleared to compete in 2010 after being sidelined for 11 months while those tests were being carried out. I don't even know what gender testing means, and I don't know why it took 11 months, but I think it's horrible. And because her testosterone levels are still reportedly higher, people don't want her to compete. Why has the Olympic Committee allowed transgender athletes to compete, but are still bothering Caster Semenya? How am I supposed to understand this at all?
Well, I think it has to do with this kind of shroud on Black women that they're immediately suspect. I think that the presumption around all of this is because of how she looks, that she was really born with male genitalia even. That's what gender testing does, right? So gender testing includes hormonal and gynecological exams to not only figure out if you have the physical attributes of someone born female, but also if you have the genes and the hormonal makeup of someone who would be considered female, right? Like, so all of those things are what she underwent. We're also dealing with the fact that she had a team that did not push back against a lot of this. She didn't really have people around her during the last games that were like, look, You can't put her any under any more scrutiny than you put any other athlete just based on her appearance. You have to, you know, we've given you all of the documentation that we've given you for everybody else on our team or that any other Olympic athlete has given you, which is like birth certificates and doctor's notes and all that goodness. So you can't put her now on extra scrutiny just because you feel like it. But instead of doing that, there was just kind of like a yes sir mentality to kind of whatever the Olympic authorities wanted to throw at her. She went into a depression. She then got some new management and a new coach that seemed to really bring her out of it and help her out of it. I shouldn't say bring her out of it. Where this is another hallmark of these Olympic games is that we give all of the male coaches and the men that surround a lot of the female athletes credit for whatever whatever achievement the woman end up doing. Mm-hmm. So she was able to come out of it with help from a supportive team. But there's this, you know, precedent set that, you know, the suspicion is still there and that she has undergone all these things to try and clear herself of this cloud of suspicion.
But my question is, why are we still talking about Caster when there are transgender athletes competing, out transgender athletes competing?
To be an out transgender athlete, we should know that out transgender athletes have to undergo medical transition, right? Like, so there is, yes, transgendered athletes are allowed to compete, but they have to have proof that they have to undergo basically the same level of gender testing that a caster would undergo. So there is that.
Yes, but they're allowed to compete now. So if people are worried that she is whatever they assume she is, she's undergone those tests. She should be allowed to compete. It should be hands off now.
She is allowed to compete. Am I missing something?
Without the scrutiny. No, people are still.
Well, that's never going to happen.
People are still putting into question if she should. No, the question, Sports right. Illustrated wrote a piece. Is it fair for Caster Semenya to compete against women at Rio?
Right. Because you can't even compete with natural edges, much less your natural body and your natural face. Look, that's what's up. I mean, the idea that, you know, in the age of amateur journalism, that there are now supposed to be sort of a consensus mm-hmm. that of how we treat people in a fair way is a fallacy. Like, that's a pipe dream. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone out there with a half-baked opinion is going to say whatever they need to say to get those clicks. And that's what's going down with Caster.
Okay.
That's what went down with Gabby.
Yes, absolutely. But Gabby, of course, had the support of another Black woman who just recently underwent similar circumstances on Twitter.
Yes.
You like Leslie? Yeah. Have you watched Ghostbusters?
Let me tell you, leave Mammy alone, okay?
Have you watched it? We're not going to talk about it, but have you watched it?
Leslie does a wonderful and fantastic array of the 13 Black stereotypes. I think, you know, her acting range can go from Jezebel to angry Black woman to Mammy in half a second.
Wow.
I think, look, I actually love her. I think I do. Just because she's getting them coins.
Look, you know, I didn't attack her. I've seen Ghostbusters. Why would I attack her? She's, as you just said, she's getting those coins. But the writing, the choices.
Bad. Mm. I expect that Ghostbusters is probably peak white feminism.
Peak.
Okay.
Peak. Through and through. It's like they just took the handbook. And we're like, oh, yes. And now we do this to the Black woman. Oh, wait. Let's not give her too many lines. Oh, no. She can't be the scientist. What? No. Anyway, but she had that support. And a lot of people came out. Shonda Rhimes, Kerry Washington. I think even Ladisi wrote a love letter to her and her edges. You know, it was a great show of support. So, and it doesn't seem, other than the hashtag, which I think dates back to the London Olympics already in 2012, the hashtag hands off Caster. There was some support, but it didn't feel it, you know, it can't really be compared in that sense. As you said, it's a lot of it is not coming from the people it should be coming from. So,
okay. Well, what Acaster shows is that, you know, LGBT issues are not just for people that identify as such.
Right.
They are also for people that may be perceived as such, mm-hmm. may be perceived as gender nonconforming or perceived as sexually nonconforming, even if that is not how they identify themselves or that's not what they are.
Right.
The perception of such is what we need to really fight for people that they should have equal rights, even if they're perceived as such. So that's really unfortunate that hadn't been picked up by more queer outlets.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Because actually the article I read was on the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
So in other disappointing news of the week, I'm very disappointed. I'm very, very disappointed. Comedy Central has decided to cancel Larry Wilmore's nightly show.
Mm-hmm.
The last one will air tonight, I believe, actually. That's how fast it gets canceled. Larry Wilmore and Trevor Noah are, as far as I know, the only two Black people with a late night show. And Larry Wilmore is the only one who took on issues in the way that he does. He took on specifically difficult, challenging race issues that were not limited to the U.S., but of course, you know, he came from The Daily Show, where he was the senior Black correspondent. You know, this is his background. This is what made him really popular and gave him that security at Comedy Central that his show could be carried. What is weird to me was that Comedy Central has given its reasoning as the show didn't resonate. Oh, excuse me. Let me just quote it directly. Quote, "We just didn't feel like we had enough traction to sign up for another year. It wasn't about the election. It's about another year of the show." End quote. They also went on to say that it hasn't resonated with viewers. It doesn't resonate?
Traction.
Mm-hmm.
Traction. Does that mean ratings?
Yes. The show never did well in ratings. That must be said. But it is also known that the way shows go about their ratings is outdated. The way cable companies and broadcasters rate how well their shows are doing is an outdated function.
Probably doesn't include clips online or any of that.
No, that's not included. Or people like me who use special VPNs to watch it. That's probably not included either.
Wow. you're directly responsible. Okay, so yeah, I mean, like, shows, first of all, I'll start by saying that I like the show. I like that he brought Francesca Ramsey on. You know, I'm a big fan for her.
Yeah, Cheska Lee.
Right. And so that's great. And I'm glad that they went in. But I also have to be very honest and say, I love political humor and I love political comedy, whether it's a Richard Pryor or a George Carlin, old school, or if you come into, you know, some of the new school guys. However, I didn't chuckle a lot to Larry Wilmore.
Oh, I did.
Like,
but maybe you were only seeing clips online. Did you ever watch full episodes, or did you only watch the clips where they had the people sitting down, like Killer Mike and DeRay Megison, talking about real issues?
Right. Like, I've seen a few full episodes, and I thought that the topics were great. Mm-hmm. It felt like a political commentary show with someone who's a little quirky, as opposed to, like, a comedic show mm-hmm. that focuses on political commentary. And so because of that lack of belly laughs, like, I felt like his content was so loaded, rightfully so, mm-hmm. right? Like, I really appreciate that he tried to put that content online. But it was so loaded that you need more belly laughs per paragraph if you're going to pull this off, mm-hmm. Because this is hard shit to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I can say. Even in, you know, Cheska Lee's segments, you know, I wasn't laughing as much mm-hmm. as even when she does her thing for MTV.
MTV. Mm-hmm.
So I think there was kind of like, and it could be that his type of humor is not really something that makes me belly laugh. Like, I'm more of a David Chappelle type of humor, like that irreverent.
Yes, you are irreverent. Mm-hmm. I'd agree.
Uh-huh. So it could be that his type of humor just didn't speak to me. I would have watched it anyway, especially mm-hmm. if people were coming on that I liked.
Right.
But now it doesn't exist. I think that it underscores that Comedy Central, a Fox Television, feel no obligation to their Black viewers at all. Especially to say, you know, we're not going to even give voice to people that can speak authentically about this historical moment that we're in, whether that be through comedy or drama or what have you. They just don't, you know, they are great for mm-hmm. someone like Shonda Rhimes, who right. performs on those ratings. You know, that's basically their game. If you work for them, they'll work for you. But you know, I guess, and that's only if mm-hmm. and when you can get in the door.
But you have to, so I guess I have to ask, you know, what is their goal? What is their purpose at Comedy Central? Normally, when I was growing up and Comedy Central was new, they were about pushing boundaries. And Wilmer absolutely did that, right? His commentary on racial issues is unmatched in late night, unmatched. Mm-hmm. And I think he's funny. He's also an executive producer of one of my favorite shows, if not my favorite show right now, which is Black-ish. Black-ish. Yes. And that also yes. gives me belly laughs, but they also talk about all these issues that Black people probably feel hurt that they talk about in public now, right? They're putting it all out there. No holds barred, from the use of the N-word to the swimming pool to the killings of Black people by the police. Like, it's all on the show. And they're getting all kinds of love from the Emmys. You know, Tracee Ellis Ross is nominated. He's an executive producer of that show. So I
think the ratings are good.
The ratings are excellent. It's like, last year was the first season. Everybody expected it to do well. It did better than they expected. And then they came back and hit harder. Second season did better than first season, unlike other shows, Empire. So,
well, I mean, you know, I feel like having a ghetto soap opera can get so messy so fast. Like, come on. I barely have patience for soap operas as is. Like, my girl put me on the Greenleaf, and I was just like, I need a set of this.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yes.
Is it good?
All of the episodes.
You watched all of it?
Yes, girl. I am up to date on Greenleaf, and let me tell you something. I am livid. Okay. I am going to withdraw my membership in that church.
Stop it. I can't wait to watch it.
Church is corrupt. Like, how y'all gonna do the work of God doing so much dirt?
Greenleaf and Underground. Yes. But, you know, all of this just to say that it's very disappointing that Comedy Central didn't stand behind someone like Larry Wilmore when Comedy Central was what gave us your irreverent
Chappelle Show.
There we go.
But Chappelle spoke on that, right?
I'm not even gonna edit out that Chappelle long pause that you needed. I'm just telling you. Go on.
It's a long pause caused by technical difficulties I've been trying to say.
Anyway.
But the Chappelle show, he spoke on the fact that the viewership was not pure. And yes. that gets to you as a political commentarian, a Black one especially, often. You know, if you're doing a thing where you're making fun of a Klan rally or a lynching, which is something that would be in line with what Chappelle did, and you have a feeling that people are laughing at you, not with you, mm-hmm. you know, and most of the viewership was white. And, you know, right when he left that show and walked away from a lot of money mm-hmm. was when, you know, technology increased to the point where he could start getting commentary about from his average viewer.
Right.
So think about that for a second. So Chappelle said, you know what? Maybe I have outlived a moment. And I felt that way as a former slam poet, right? You know, there was poetry that I was doing at Howard University that I felt very comfortable doing, whether it be about queerness or Blackness or femininity or what have you, all these like very controversial subjects. Mm-hmm. But there was one thing that I did not feel interested and performing poetry about race or that included race mm-hmm. in front of a white audience. Mm-hmm. I am no longer a poet. I'm a former poet, right? Like, at least a public one. I mean, just because I'm not interested in having those, you know, after the show conversations with white folks, I'm not.
In our second segment, we must talk about something we've actually already talked about. Earlier this year, my colleague said that she was very excited about a film that now everyone
I'm your colleague. I told you about using corporate speak in personal relationships. See, that's why you ain't got no friends. I've been saying this about you, Scorpio. Like, come on, colleague. I'm your colleague now. That's where we at. Okay. Moving on. Anyway, let's keep it moving.
Okay, we're gonna keep it moving. So, there's a film called Birth of a Nation. It was written, produced, and directed, starred in by a person named Nate Parker. Birth of a Nation was a favorite at Sundance, and it recorded the highest sale of such a film at Sundance for $17.5 million to Fox.
Good times.
Now, as we move into award season, which I'm excited about. Award season! Now that we move into award season, of course, people begin to scrutinize who is Nate Parker. And it didn't take long to find out that 17 years ago, he was involved with a rape case.
Mm-hmm.
He was charged with sexual assault alongside his friend and co-writer of Birth of a Nation, Jean Celestin.
Celestine,
yes.
How you say that? Celestine.
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't speak Haitian French. I don't speak Haitian French. So I'm going to just call him Jean.
Take on my French accent, like Celestine. That's how I think you pronounce it.
Okay. So just to give everyone a brief before we go in, there's a lot of different things that have been coming out over the entire week. So bear with me. Nate Parker was studying at Penn State. Him and his boy, Jean, and he was on the wrestling team. Him and his boy,
on athletic scholarship.
Yes. Him and his boy, Jean, knew an unnamed woman. And according to her, they went out, party, they had some drinks. She wound up sexually assaulted. She said she could not provide consent because she was unconscious. The police felt that there was enough to charge them with. They did not feel like everything that went down that night was consensual. Nate Parker was acquitted due to the fact that he said it was consensual and that they had previously had consensual sex. Jean, however, was convicted.
Oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
Consensual oral sex.
Okay, still be sex. Real. Still sex. Jean was convicted. However, fought really hard. He was only meant to go to jail for 6 months, but he fought really hard against that conviction. It was overturned, and eventually they were ready to try the case again. Now, some reports stated that they did not go to trial again because the unnamed woman did not want to testify. That is false. What really happened was she was ready to testify, but the prosecution was unwilling to find all of the witnesses again. They felt like it would be too much work. So Jean never had to go to trial again. So what you have basically now are two acquittals. As these things go.
And records expunged, like not just acquittals, but like the Mark Wahlberg treatment of acquittals, like, you know, nothing ever happened.
Right.
Yeah, these are not the droids you're looking for.
As these things go, people, specifically Black people, have begun to question why these allegations are coming up now. Isn't it convenient when he's having so much success? Blah, blah, blah. It's not convenient. It's how these things go. When you
it's have, always been on his Wikipedia.
It's yeah. always been there. Now people are talking about mm-hmm. it specifically because he is getting a lot of attention. When you didn't know who he was, you didn't care about his rape charge. So what has further come out is that the woman died of an overdose while at a rehabilitation facility. She struggled with depression. She attempted to kill herself several times. She had a highlight where she was breaking through the depression and gave birth to a boy, baby boy, but unfortunately was not able to break the cycle of depression and wound up committing suicide. Nate Parker did not know about that suicide. That should also be said. So I want to start with Nate Parker's really, really, really bad interview before he engaged Olivia Pope. So he gave an interview to Variety and he was as nonchalant and ambivalent and shady about the matter as he could be. He didn't want to say anything. He didn't want to use any real words. He was just like, you know, there was this thing and it happened and that was 17 years ago and it made me a man and it was litigated and I was acquitted and that's all good. That is, I don't even have to quote it. That is basically what he said. And then after engaging a better PR person, he responded on Facebook after hearing that she had committed suicide, and you know, said that he was deeply sorry to hear about it, and he understands that the whole situation has caused a lot of grief also for the family, but he never misses a beat, of course, to stake his claim and his innocence. So here we are. Why is this important to discuss? Some people say it's important to discuss because there is a really, really important, very dramatic, and extremely brutal rape scene of Nat's wife in Birth of a Nation. And he spoke out in an interview once and said that he absolutely abhors the system that accommodates rape culture. To be honest, I have to say I don't believe him, because Nate Parker said that he doesn't play gay men in movies because he's preserving the black man. So I really doubt his idea of patriarchy is in tune with.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a level of hotepetry here that I can't even begin to quantify.
I do have to mention, because it's come up a lot, and then I'm going to let you talk. I'm sorry. I do really just have to mention he is married to a white woman, which a lot of people criticize him for. I think that's unimportant. He's married to a white woman, but he has 5 daughters. Okay, go to Hotep. Sorry.
I mean, I think the thing that comes out of this, and I'll start with this takeaway that I've, after reading so many, many, many court documents and articles about, think pieces about this issue, is how much of a bonding experience rape is for men. It's such a bonding experience for them. Like, they just, you know, they go on to conquer nations, make movies, run for political office. Yes. Like, they're like, you are my boy until the day that I die. I know I could trust you. You didn't flip on me. I didn't flip on you. Mm-hmm. And we went through this together. And it all started with that one vagina. I feel very strongly that it is a bonding experience, because when you look at all of these powerful men, not just accused of rape, but this gang rape type of situation, you're like, you know, this isn't about choices, right? Mm-hmm. These were both attractive, up and coming, bright athletes. They were probably fit as shit. Mm-hmm. I know what UPenn is like. They could have gone back
to that bar. Penn State, it's not UPenn.
I'm sorry. I know what Penn State's like, in the sense that they could have gone to the bar and had their pick of consensual situations. So it clearly wasn't about, you know, scarcity, which, of course, it's a myth anyway. Rape is never about scarcity of sexual outlets. It was about something they decided to do together. There was another brother that walked away from the situation and was like, whatever is happening here, I am not involved. This is not who I am, is what he said. He went on to be in the military, ROTC, at the time of the incident, and he actually left the house. That's how deep it was for him. He was like, I don't even want to be on the premises.
That's not helpful to her, though, is it?
It isn't helpful to her. At the same time, as the brother has said in the Variety follow-up, where the brother actually came in the comments on Variety and was like, I'm her brother, blah, blah, blah. And then they followed up with that brother. He said things have changed since the time of the trial, and if they were tried by today's standards, we probably would have had a different outcome.
Perhaps, but so it still things have changed. Necessarily, but it's not. I read that he said that. I don't believe it. We see a lot of acquittals. We still see a lot of acquittals, and even people who do get convicted of having non-consensual sex with someone who's unconscious don't actually have to go to prison. So,
right, or have no sentence.
Right.
Yeah, as we've seen in 2 situations, one in California and one in Colorado, mm-hmm. both white men, I might add. I think the racial dynamics of this case would have demanded a prison sentence.
Maybe.
They also had a lot of things. Nate and Celestine and Jean had a lot of things working in their favor in this case. They had a figurative Mark Furman. For those of you who don't know, in the O.J. Simpson case, there was an officer named Mark Furman in the case that had racist leanings and fudged a lot of procedures and opened the door for reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. So they had their own Mark Furman. His name was Officer Weaver. Officer Weaver was very overzealous. Mm. He didn't record interviews in which they supposedly admitted certain things. On top of that, Officer Weaver was on record saying, you athletes do this sort of thing all the time and you're going to pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. So having judgment, all of that alone, the presence of an Officer Weaver on this case also makes, opens the door for reasonable doubt in 2016.
Of course.
Our Jane Doe, our alleged rape victim here, is caught between two systems, right? She's caught between this toxic masculinity that feels like anything but a kick down, drag out fight of you saying no and screaming out into the night naked mm-hmm. isn't rape, right? Like anything short of that is not rape.
Right.
And then she's also caught between a judicial system that sees two Black men and is used to treating them a certain way, you know, doesn't treat them like people with resources and therefore cuts corners. And really, that really end up tanking her case, right? There's a piece of this where I'm like, okay, there's one of two realities here. One is that Nate Parker is an absolute genius type sociopath. That could be the case because of the thing that I'm going to tell you later. And the other is that he really believes that what he did is not rape. And he really has another reality that plays out in his mind as truth of what happened that night. Because even when he's being legally recorded, whether he's being legally or illegally recorded, even when he did not know he was being recorded in any of the recordings, as far as we know, he did not know he was being recorded. He says to the woman, to the Jane Doe, you were active, you were awake, you initiated this, you did that. And he sticks on those points. He was like, I shouldn't have, his moral confusion about that moment was, I shouldn't have had a spontaneous threesome, mm-hmm. as opposed to, I should not have had sex with a non-consenting individual. It kind of lends itself to this massive indie movie, right? Whereby you have all of these characters, and medically, what he is saying could technically, theoretically be true. Because if there's a difference between being blackout drunk and unconscious drunk, right? People can blackout and be acting and walking and talking and driving a car and not have any recollection the next day. Mm-hmm. that they were doing any of those things. And that was what his defense stood on.
Yes, but we're not here to try him. My question is, why does it matter?
I am.
No, I'm not. Why does it matter? Why does it matter?
All of this.
Why does it matter 17 years later? He's made an excellent film. He's shown people that it is possible to make a movie without needing Hollywood money. It's possible to get people excited about a movie that has a very specific theme that focuses on one part of the country, one demographic.
But it matters because of the numbers. At least 50% of people that are going to see his movie are probably going to be women. 1/3 of the general population and 60% of Black women. 1/3 of the general female population and 60% of Black women have been sexually assaulted by the time they're 18. Mm-hmm. So that means that on a good day, 30% of that audience or 20% of that audience are survivors of sexual assault. And they are looking at this conversation and they're making decisions about how they're going to proceed with their lives, whether they're going to proceed with prosecution.
Yeah, but before any of that, there's a brutal sexual assault scene in the movie. So why does it matter what he did outside of the movie? Like, they have to think about that before they even go see the movie, no?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, it's, you know, you have this person who's putting themselves out there as qualified and committed to telling a story of Black liberation. And if the way that he views 50% of Black people is less than subhuman, so much so.
How can that be said? He, 17 years ago, he said he's learned a lot. It was 17 years ago. He said that he became a man through this situation, however that is defined. You know, he's married, he's got daughters. All he can do today is be the best man possible. Why is that not an acceptable statement?
Because there's a sense that he has not paid at all.
Okay.
For for bad behavior, at the very least, right? Like, whether or not you're willing to go as far and say, okay, well, that was rape, that whether it was just bad behavior or rape, that there have been little to no consequences for that. He has had a splendid, magnificent life full of glowing highlights, children, marriage. Meanwhile, she was languishing with the consequences of this. I mean, like, if this isn't a Les Miserables kind of experience, you tell right before our eyes of someone who does evil, so allegedly does evil and goes on to, regardless of that evil, have a very blessed life. And then, you know, is able to, through his work, tell a story of rape that gets seen by millions of people. I mean, like, if that is not insult to injury, as her brother was saying, I don't know what is. I have another thing to say about this. I feel like Nate's response to this has been better than any of his people, cohorts that have been in the same situation. You mentioned an Olivia Pope. I think what you mean by that is that he's commissioned a PR agency or something to start to vet his responses and help him give more efficient responses. But even when you're in the Variety magazine phase, when that first gets brought up and he doesn't know what's going to come up, it's still better than a Bill Cosby. It's still better than a R. Kelly. It's still better than a Woody Allen and how they deal with it. So this sense of, you know, that's the part where I was saying that either he's a sociopath, because I mean, like, not only did he have the presence of mind, if he did do what she alleged, he still had the presence of mind to craft another narrative within a private telephone conversation. And he has stuck to that narrative ever since. And I mean, here's a quote from Nate. The fact that we are making moves and taking action to protect women on campuses and off campuses and educating men and persecuting them when things come up. I want women to stand up, to speak out when they feel violated in every degree as I prepare to take my own daughter to college, end quote. So, right? This is not anything that I have ever seen come out of an alleged rapist's mouth in my day, ever, right? So at least within pop culture.
We're in pop culture. There are people like Woody Allen who can still make a movie tomorrow and it'll be an A-list movie with A-list Lance actors, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. It'll do well. It'll do decently at the very least. Not all of Woody's films do well, but they always do well enough. My question is, do we boycott a film that is so important on so many levels? Because
I don't really think that a boycott looks the same in 2016.
No, it does look the same. Because there, we have successfully boycotted several films that tank. Gods of Egypt.
But that's, you know,
Stonewall.
That's the thing is
Stonewall.
That
Stonewall.
Right, right. But that's when you're looking at like the whole situation. The whole film itself is not a message that we want to push forward.
Right.
I don't know if we could say that about the Nat Turner movie. That it's not a message we want to push forward.
The reason I'm trying to nail
the people
you down
that have seen.
Is because
they try to nail me down all the time. Why don't you
black
talk
nerd
about
problems?
You gonna boycott it?
Black nerd problems. The editor William Evans, he wrote, they will not be reviewing The Birth of a Nation upon its release. I completely follow. I personally will probably not go see the film in the theater, but I will see the film. But I will not support it financially because I know that there are enough people who will. In this case, I honestly believe enough people will go see this film that it will be a success. And that's okay, but I personally won't be a part of it. I don't think the film should fail because of his past, but considering both of them did write this film, considering a very key scene in this film is a sexual assault scene, considering that I can't recognize true remorse.
No, he can't legally have remorse, right? Because legally and in his, for his own PR image, he has to maintain.
No, I feel like the Facebook message that he posted where he was, you know, devastated as he wrote upon hearing that the victim committed suicide years ago. He could have had remorse in that without still feeling the need to go into his innocence. And that's why I said it was sculpted by an Olivia Pope, because that's what you do. You can't at any given moment only focus on the victim without saying, but you know, I didn't do it.
Even though he says it's not coming from a paid PR agent, he says this has not been filtered through anyone but me, but you do not believe that.
I don't believe that. There's just such a difference from the way he gave that interview at Variety. No, I don't believe it. Period. I don't believe it. So I will watch the film. I will not pay to watch it.
Yeah, Brittany Cooper has the same take. Brittany Cooper has said, he has said unequivocally, this rapist. She ain't missed some words.
Professor Crop.
She ain't missing words. She's like real clear, like he's a rapist. The Madame Noir consensus was also, I can't see it. There's another amazing article that talked about dealing with a rape victim whose abuser goes on to have a meteoric career rise and how they deal with watching that happen. So I think
on the other hand, a lot of people are mad because they see a Black man is not getting to shine where Woody Allen gets to, or Roman Polanski. And they're like, that's not fair. And that's what happens.
But I will say that
you start fighting for the wrong thing.
Right. Black liberation will not come through engaging in white patriarchy. Right. Like
no.
it's not.
No. It's, absolutely you know, not.
That's not how our Black liberation is going to come.
In our third segment, what we're looking forward to and what's making us happy. What are you looking forward to? What are you excited about?
I am excited about coming to London. I'm already planning for that, already getting ready for my Grace Jones thing. I only have one day because apparently Afropunk London really only has time for one day of events. Like, they don't really have that much talent in London. So what is the deal, Afropunk London? I know y'all got more than one day for me.
It's so funny that you mentioned Afropunk today. I have some tea. So apparently Afropunk London is being organized by two white people.
I had told you that though. Oh, snap.
You didn't say anything about white people.
I said it. They was in the video for Okay.
No, you didn't.
You didn't say that.
I'm sorry, boo. Okay. That's not what you said.
You know what? The Alzheimer's has already got to you, but that's all right.
We have video recordings as receipts. We can talk.
Woo! You know what, Scorpio? Not today, Satan. Okay. Let's go.
Anyway, go on.
So it's being organized by two white folks.
I have no more tea for you. Go on.
No, go ahead. Tell me. Mm-mm.
I'm done.
Tell me.
What else are you excited about?
They Brexit supporters, ain't they? They was campaigning. They was the ones that funded the bus. They got, you know, I'm excited that they got Grace Jones on there. I'm excited for a lot of the other people on the lineup, a lot of really cool talent, but you know, Afropunk London, Comedy Central, you know, they will use our talent all day long, but they really have their own interests at heart at the end of the day.
Guess who won't be there though? Eska. I know you didn't like Eska that much when we saw her in Paris. I loved her, and I ran into her the other day, and I was the biggest fangirl. I said, Eska! Oh my God, Eska, I love you so much!
Why are you trying to put me on blast that I didn't like people? I was just like socializing a lot in Africa.
You said you didn't feel that so much. I remember correctly.
Don't be putting me on blast. I have my own mind and my own voice. What my own opinions are. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you saw her. It was good. That's great.
Well, she is beautiful inside and out. I love me some Eska. I am such a fangirl.
Why won't she be there?
She will be at BAM in Spain. She said they did ask her, but it's a different festival.
Okay.
They did ask her, but she won't be able to make it, unfortunately.
I'm very curious as if Cecilia Mekki will be there. She was part of the driving force in getting Afropunk to reconsider MIA headlining Afropunk London.
She got other things to consider at this point. So
there are other things on her plate. So
I'm very excited about Lara and Vula. Can't wait to see her. But it is what it is.
So I'm excited about seeing you too, Sourpuss. No. Sourpuss Magus. Yes. Excited about that. All right. What else is happening?
I guess that'll work.
What are you excited about?
I am excited about the fact that one of the highest certified Iyengar teachers, and my ultimate teacher was here in London for, unfortunately, only a 3-hour workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it. I lived through it.
Mm-hmm.
And my body even feels good 3 days later. I didn't mess myself up, which is normally what I do. So I'm excited because he said that I should come to San Francisco and train with him. So I'm obviously very excited to do so.
Wow.
That makes me very happy. And I'm excited about finally finishing Black-ish season 2. And now I can get on to the Get Down. That's what's happening.
Oh, you ready for the Get Down? You going to do the Get Down?
I'm doing the Get Down.
Okay, so I did the first episode.
I've heard the I've already heard the review on the first episode. You have to move past that. It's kind of like Sense 8. You can't get caught up. It's a little all over the place, but then the writing gets tighter as you move forward. You didn't read the Very Smart Brothers review?
I did read their review. And I was like, I don't know if I could trust them.
That's a mess.
But, you know, actually, this is the reason why I don't watch Stranger Things. I already said this. I am a chicken shit. I am so fearful.
It has nothing to do with the Get Down.
It does have to do with the Get Down. I like people in the Get Down already. I don't want anything bad to happen to them.
Nothing bad is happening.
There's
going to
be a lot of jumping on train tracks. There's going to be a lot of inhaling fumes and doing complicated techniques with... I don't know.
You're old.
I'm at a point in my life where I don't need no drama. I don't need no hateratum, complication in this dancery. All right. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I'm at right now for me.
Okay.
My life.
Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with this, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Also, if you'd like to support us with a small donation, we really appreciate it. We are on Patreon. That's patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next time, peace out.